Oyez, 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 the Honorable Court of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Good morning, y'all. I see that you're already seated, so we don't have to ask you to be seated. I hope everybody's doing okay. Welcome to your Third Court of Appeals via Zoom, kind of a brave new world for all of us. We appreciate you all being flexible in doing this and appreciate your patience. And we will likewise be patient with you all to the extent people have technical glitches. We'll get through this. We have one case during this session, so we'll go ahead and call for announcements from the attorneys in Hager versus Healthcare Service Corporation, cause number 19864-CV.
Ray Langenberg for the state.
Mr. Langenberg.
Doug Siegel with Ryan Law Firm for Healthcare Service Corporation, doing business as Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Good morning, Mr. Siegel. As I take that you all know, this is being broadcast live on YouTube. It will also be taken and archived on the court's website after the fact. For those of you who may be new to the Third Court, which I don't believe either of you are, each side gets 20 minutes to argue. I understand that we have a relatively complex division of time today, and so I'm going to rely upon the clerk to help keep us all on track as far as who goes when. I know you're familiar with the time warning system. When the yellow light comes on, that means you have 2 minutes in the given segment that we're within. When the red light comes on, that means you're out of time. If you would look to the court, we'd appreciate it. We will try to be generous in letting you finish up the thought that you're on. And with that, we will hear from Mr. Langenberg, correct?
That is correct.
All right.
So, Your Honors, today I want to pose three general questions that I hope will be resolved by answers to some specific questions. The three questions are, number one, is this court willing to say that group stop-loss insurance does not arise from the business of health insurance when healthcare services is only certificated for the business of health insurance? Number two, is the court willing to say that the group stop-loss premiums were not subject to the Texas insurance premium taxes when every other kind of insurance on Texas risks is subject to the Texas insurance premium tax? And number three, is the court willing to say that the group stop-loss insurance premiums were not included in the maintenance tax base when the maintenance tax base is designed to recover the cost of regulating stop-loss insurance, this stop-loss insurance? Now, I want to answer some specific questions that the judges may have. Number one, is the group stop-loss insurance health insurance? And the answer is yes, but it doesn't have to be. For purposes of the insurance premium tax, it just has to arise from the business of health insurance. It does not have to be health insurance, but it is in fact health insurance because it covers losses resulting from medical claims. If you look at the Blue Cross and Blue Shield application for stop loss coverage, it's clerk's record 667. At the bottom of that page, it lists the things to which the aggregate stop loss insurance will apply, and the box is checked medical claims. This is medical insurance because it insures losses from medical claims. And I will say that interpretation is consistent with the definition of accident and health insurance policies, or accident and health insurance policies, that are in the insurance code. You can look at the definitions in Chapter 1201 and the definitions in Chapter 1204, and they refer to contracts that provide for recovery against loss resulting from injury, sickness, or accident.
Mr. Langenberg, what of the appellate's point that the comptroller and hearing decision numbers 1009-354 and 1009-355 haven't taken this step to hold that stop loss policies were in fact health insurance policies?
Well, I tend to disagree with that evaluation. If you look at the outcome of that hearing, it said that's the stop loss insurance premiums that at issue in that case were subject to the health insurance premium tax. And so it is if you look at the outcome of that decision, it is consistent with what I am saying here, which is that these stop-loss insurance premiums for employer-funded employee health plans are covered by the health insurance premium tax. So that's so as far as I'm concerned, I don't see that that hearings decision ends up in a different outcome than what I am arguing today. Now,
I don't know if this would be a time to work it in, too, but one of the things I was curious about is sort of the difference between the premium tax and the maintenance tax and sort of what the purposes behind those were, to the extent that that's relevant to distinguishing between the claims.
Yes, Your Honor. The insurance premium tax is the language is more nebulous, I would say, than the maintenance tax. The health insurance premium tax covers risks on individuals or groups located in this state arising from the business of health insurance. So for the insurance premium tax, it just has arise from the business of health insurance. Now, the maintenance tax, on the other hand, is statutorily, the purpose of that is to, in fact, this is the appellees even admit this in footnote 185 of their brief. The object sought to be obtained by statute is to pay the expenses during the succeeding year of regulating life, health, and accident insurers. So it's, so the purpose of the maintenance tax is to recover the cost of regulating companies like healthcare services. So that's the purpose of it. Now, the scope of the tax relates to gross premiums from writing life, health, and accident insurance in the state. So I recognize that that definition, that term is slightly narrower than what the definition of is for the insurance premium tax, where it just has to arise from. But my point, Your Honors, is that with regard to either the insurance premium tax or the maintenance tax, this is health insurance because it covers losses resulting from medical claims. And if you look at their insurance policy application, the claims that are covered are medical claims. It's consistent with the insurance code, and I mentioned those two chapters of the insurance code. I will tell you that if the American National Supreme Court decision, which is I think even included in the clerk's record here, warns that the insurance code is a little bit different than other codes in that the definitions are not uniformly used throughout the entire code. So just because there is a definition in one section of the code, one chapter of the code, does not necessarily mean that it is applicable to another chapter of the code. So I want to acknowledge that up front, and the court should be aware of that. So what the court then has to do is to look at the context in which the terms are used in particular chapters and decide what these terms mean based on the context in which they are used in that chapter. And so... is this health insurance? First of all, from a common sense standpoint, Mr. Siegel and I used to be partners in the same law firm, and we had group health insurance. And so, and my spouse was a covered person under that our group policy. And so, if she went to the doctor and got sick, I paid the medical bill, I would submit my claim form to the insurance company. The insurance company would look and say, well, okay, your spouse, the employee of the spouse's employee of the spouse of the employee is a covered person. This is a medical claim. You're covered, but you have a $2,100 deductible. So come back and see us when your medical claims amount to $2,100. That's medical insurance. I don't think anybody would deny that. Now, let's look at these group stop loss policies that are at issue here. Again, they're in the policy itself. It describes the covered persons, and the covered persons in the policy include the employee and dependents. So if I was subject to one of these policies and my wife got sick, I went to the doctor, I would pay for her medical expenses, and then my employer would have a contractual obligation under this plan to reimburse me for those medical claims. Then the employer would in turn present those medical claims to Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And Blue Cross and Blue Shield would say, okay, well, I look at your policy here and I see that covered persons includes the spouse of employee. You're good there. I see that on your application form, the risks include medical claims. So, your policy has an attachment point of $5,000, not a deductible, but they call it an attachment point. And so come back and see us when your expenses total $5,000. It's essentially the same thing as the group in health insurance that Mr. Siegel and I had with our law firm. It is medical insurance because it is based on losses resulting from medical claims. So under both the insurance premium tax, by the way, it only has to arise under the business of insurance and under the maintenance tax, this is medical insurance. The other thing that I want to talk about in my last minute has to do with this notion of whether or not it covers individuals or groups. And the answer is this stop-loss insurance covers groups because the insurance policy itself refers to the employer as a group. The Department of Insurance Regulations 3.4005 refers to this as group stop-loss insurance policies. The insurance code recognizes that an employer is a group. And so what I say the court should do is look to the actual usage of this term by the party, by the Department of Insurance, and by the insurance code to conclude that this is a group and that dictionary definitions taken out of context with no context should not trump the way the term group is actually used in the insurance code and by these parties, and I'm out of time and I'm going to stop talking.
Thanks, sir. Mr. Siegel, I see we have a segment from you and you have 15 minutes within this period.
Thank you. I had filed exhibits which hopefully made their way to the justices yesterday. So I'm going to refer to those if I might. I want to start with the facts of the case. Remember, this is a summary judgment case. And Judge Meacham, who was the trial judge, she poured through the summary judgment evidence, four different affidavits at least, three affidavits from Al Trotter, one from Ms. Hyken. Much of that affidavit testimony contradicts, from a factual standpoint, what Mr. Langenberg has argued. Mr. Langenberg's description of the facts, his arguments about the way insurance works, I don't think it means anything. The affidavits on the summary judgment motion are what this court really needs to focus on. So what we've done in these exhibits is we have tab 4, which are some charts that summarize the evidence. This is tab 4 in the exhibits. I believe the first page is page 44 at the top. And I think these charts, which are based on the evidence, would be helpful in refuting a lot of what Mr. Langenberg said. So the first chart says individual health insurance. This is a situation where an individual purchases health insurance. So I would call up Blue Cross or any carrier and say, I want to buy a policy. I'm unemployed. Maybe it's Obamacare. That's individual health insurance. That covers the risks of the individual's health expenses. And I would submit claims to the health insurance company. That would be risks on individuals, tracking the statutory language. Page 2 here talks about organizational group health coverage. And there's two types of organizational group health insurance. One would be organization having a policy. The example used here is Bar Association. Let's say I retired next week. I could get insurance through the ABA. I could get insurance through the State Bar of Texas health plan. I could get insurance through AARP, among other groups, because I belong to those groups. Those are group health insurance plans, and they have a group health insurance policy. And the insurance company covers the risk to the group members. In other words, as a group member, I would submit claims, and the insurance is on my risks. And that's the way employer health insurance works, and that's the way group insurance works. The next slide talks about employer group health insurance. This is what I had when I was working with Mr. Langenberg back at our old law firm. Well, that was a group health insurance plan. It was through an insurance company, and they were insuring the risks on individuals and groups, really on the group and the individuals in the group. Well, that's not what we're talking about here. Mr. Langenberg, in his discussion, blurs the concept of an employer group health plan with an employer self-funded plan. And those things are like apples and oranges. The next slide here talks about an employer self-funded plan. And this is all based on the record, by the way. An employer self-funded plan, as all of the authorities we cite establish, as the Trotter Affidavit establishes, is not insurance. I happen to have an employer self-funded plan at Ryan Law. What that means is Ryan Law, the business, pays the claims. Now, there is a third-party administrator, and Blue Cross Blue Shield can be third-party administrators on these plans that we're talking about, and they can issue stop-loss policies. But it's just a fallacy to suggest that with an employer self-funded plan, you have health insurance. There's no health insurance. The reimbursement of the cost by the employer is not health insurance. That's not me saying that. That's covered in American National. It's covered in all the authorities, all the law. There's nothing in the regulation that contradicts what I'm saying. And the plan is just a piece of paper. The business is paying those costs. So if I have $3 million worth of bills for my care, Ryan Law writes a check for that. That's coming right out of the business. That's not insurance. That is an employer self-funded plan. Now, you may have a third-party administrator. We happen to have United Healthcare. All they do, though, is negotiate better rates for the Ryan Law plan with different companies, and they also would negotiate over claims. They're not providing insurance. Now, the last slide shows you really what we're talking about, which is Blue Cross stop-loss policies. Now, under the stop-loss policy, Blue Cross, and this is all in the record, this is the actual evidence, doesn't cover any of the claims by the individuals who are being reimbursed for their costs by the employer. There's no-
But Mr. Siegel, would you agree they cover a risk? Would you agree that Blue Cross Blue Shield is covering covering some sort of risk?
Well, it's a ceiling that they put on the employer's expenses. And frankly, Goldman Sachs or a bank or anybody could offer a stop loss plan or stop loss policy. It's not a health insurance product. The Fifth Circuit has said that. Texas Department of Health has said it. The comptroller has said that in these decisions.
What risk then are they covering? How would you, I mean, I think you agree with me that they're covering some type of risk, and your slide says they're not covering risks on individuals or groups. So what risk are they covering?
They're covering a risk to the employer. Ryan Law has to come up with $3 million in my example to cover the bill for my $3 million worth of care, unless Blue Cross or some company provides stop loss. So maybe it says, once we get to $1 million on any particular claims from a particular individual, then those costs to the employer are reimbursed above that level.
But isn't that risk tied ultimately to some cost of healthcare?
Well, there may be an indirect connection between the level of reimbursement by the plan, the benefit plan, and their cost. And then those costs are subject to the agreement between, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield and the employer. The problem is, if you look at what the statute talks about, it talks about insurance risks on individuals or groups. So Mr. Langenberg wants to rewrite these statutes, and that's not the way these statutes work. These statutes are strictly construed. Tax law is strictly construed. And here,
Mr. Siegel is. I'm sorry, these are hard enough to interrupt. I apologize. So at this point, is the analysis we're doing looking at that language from the insurance code 222.002B that is the arising from the business of health, life, or accident insurance?
That's one of two issues. One issue is, does it arise from the business of health insurance? The second, and I disagree. That both of these prongs have to be met. The second prong is, are we covering risks on individuals or groups?
Right.
And all of the authorities, you know, I think the Fifth Circuit interpretation, the insurance industry's interpretation, the comptroller's interpretation, all of the weight of authorities should matter to this court, not Mr. Langenberg's attempt to blur these things together. And what the law is, for example, what does arising from mean? Arising from means under settled Texas law, caused by, you know, does an injury arise from an accident? Well, let's think about this. There's no health insurance involved in these self-funded plans. The employer is not providing health insurance. That's settled law. The employer is not providing health insurance to the employee. That's not health insurance. They're not regulated as health insurance. They're covered by ERISA. The American National talks about this. So then the stop loss policy is on the employer. The employer isn't providing health insurance. So the stop loss policy doesn't arise out of any health insurance. Now, I think what gets confusing is when Mr. Langenberg tries to tie in there the example of the plan that he had when he worked at the law firm with me. That was a traditional health insurance plan, right? A self-funded plan is a completely different animal. It's different legally. The level of regulation, by the way, for self-funded plans in Texas and for stop loss is very minimal, as we point out. The only thing that happens is those policy forms are approved. All of the regulations on health insurance, all the things that typically a health insurance carrier has to do, those are not imposed on stop loss companies. So I think it's just wrong to say that stop loss premiums arise out of health insurance. That's just not true. Now, there may be medical claims involved. Sure, the medical claims are made by the employee with the employer. And then, again, no insurance is going on there, but those are reimbursed. Then there is a stop loss policy that protects the employer from unexpected or puts a ceiling on claims. That, again, isn't health insurance. It doesn't arise out of health insurance, even though my opposing counsel wants to characterize it that way. Then we talk about covering risks on individuals or groups. Now, I already covered that in my charts. Risk on an individual is a risk to the individual that's covered. The individual's risk is covered. You have to cover the individual. That would be providing insurance to an individual who buys a plan. That was my first example. Risks on groups. That would be somebody who is covered by a group health policy of insurance. And we gave two examples of that, right? The example of the ABA plan, because I'm a member of the ABA, the example of an employer. In the briefs, there are legion quotes that we go through over and over again, where the courts, the comptroller, even TDI have said that a self-funded plan and stop loss is not, those are not group health policies. Okay, now sometimes an employer funded health plan is referred to as a group plan in the sense that, okay, you have individuals who work for the employer who has a self-funded plan. That is really a self-funded benefits plan. The other point that I think really is important is if you go back to American National, and we have a copy of this in the exhibits, but I don't know that I want to go through that with you right now. Just talk big picture about American National. American National dealt with whether TDI could regulate stop loss. It did not deal with whether stop loss could be taxed. And what it said was that stop loss for regulatory purposes is similar to health insurance or in the nature of health insurance, but it didn't say that it was health insurance. And in fact, what's so interesting about that case is it says that they say that the insurance tax is ambiguous in the area of the treatment of stop loss. They say it's ambiguous, but because we're dealing there with regulation, the area of regulation, you're going to construe ambiguity in favor of TDI and in favor of regulation, but ambiguity in taxation is treated entirely differently. If there's ambiguity about the scope of taxation, you strictly construe tax laws against the state and in favor of the taxpayer. The other really interesting thing, and I'm sure everyone picked up on this when they read American National, is American National talks about a specific tax, the risk pool tax, that was imposed on stop loss. If you read American National, I've highlighted this in the copy in your exhibits. In American National, they said because the legislature has imposed this risk pool tax and because it specifically references stop loss insurance as being insurance covered by the risk pool, they then say that gives TDI the ability to regulate stop loss. Now that's so interesting in this case. Why? Because they, in that law and only in that law, referenced stop loss. They didn't reference stop loss in the maintenance tax. They didn't reference stop loss in the premium tax. And so if the legislature intends to tax stop loss, what do? They reference it expressly. And that's really what a strict construction, plain meaning of tax law should lead you to do. The other interesting thing is in 2005, that risk pool law got recodified and the language was changed again. And the language that was used in 2005, and I think we're going to submit this after the hearing, a copy of this, they actually changed the language of the risk pool to health benefit arrangements and health benefit plan issuer, and says a health benefit plan issuer includes stop loss insurance. It means an entity that provides health benefit plan coverage in the state. And that was a very, very broad definition. So when the legislature wants to tax stop loss, they know how to do it. They did it in the risk pool statute that then got tweaked a little bit in 2005. Eventually, I think that risk pool went away with the Affordable Care Act. But my point is, the reason that the primary reason they allowed regulation of stop loss was because of the specific tax that was imposed on stop loss in the risk pool. However, now the comptroller says, well, these other taxes don't reference stop loss, but we want you, and I would call judicial activism, to broadly and creatively construe these two statutes as covering these things because they look a little bit like health insurance, because the word medical claims is used in the policy. And I mean, that doesn't comport with any of the precedent that's been cited to you from the Fifth Circuit, from insurance law, insurance groups, the Texas Department of Insurance. So that I would admit is highly problematic.
Can I ask, is there any aspect of the stop loss insurance that's at issue here that involves an employer group health plan as opposed to an employer self-funded plan? Do we have different categories of stop loss, or are we all within the employer self-funded plan for purposes here? Everybody's not.
These are all employer self-funded plan. Those are regulated by ERISA. And frankly, the regulation of those employer funded plans is virtually non-existent by TDI. Stop loss, which stems from is regulated in a very limited way. All that happens is the policies get submitted to TDI. They approve the policy forms. They don't do most of the other regulatory functions because of ERISA. And by the way, everything I'm telling you is in the record. Ms. Hyken's affidavit, the three affidavits from Mr. Trotter, all of the authorities I cite, the comptroller hearings, read those comptroller hearings. In fact, the comptroller hearings suggest that the pre-2007 version of the premium tax language, which was just covering persons, that was distinguished from covering individuals or groups. And they said that the pre-2007 version, which had persons, did tax stop loss, but they even say in the opinion that we cite that if it talks about individuals or group, it wouldn't cover stop loss. Then the legislature changes to individuals or groups, which under the comptroller's logic in their own decision means the statutory change is even clearer that it was never covered.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. We may need to move on and let Mr. Longenberg have his next session, and you'll get one last shot at it. Okay,
thank
Mr. Longenberg, by my count, you've got 10 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, I'm not asking you to exercise judicial activism. If anything, this would be judicial passivism. The statute says that it has to arise.
Not sure which is worse.
Well,
I know activism is bad, but I haven't really thought about passivism.
Well, maybe I'm not even asking you to do that, okay? But at any rate, I'm saying you don't have to go very far out on the limb in this case. The statute says it has to arise from the business of health insurance. Healthcare services is only certificated in the business of health insurance. So you don't have to go very far out on the limb to say that this arises from the business of health insurance.
So what about Mr. Siegel's argument that because these are these employee-funded plans, there's no insurance aspect involved?
Well, first of all, this is insurance. Stop-loss insurance is insurance. And again, the question is, does it arise from the business of health insurance? And the answer is yes, because it is health insurance. Remember on their...
That seemed to go in a circle.
I hate to keep flashing this application form in front of you again, but it refers to medical claims. In other words, the risks are medical claims. This stop-loss insurance is medical insurance. So when you say, does it arise from the business of health insurance? Yes, because this is health insurance. You do not have to go out very far on the limb. I won't say you have to be a passive about this, but you don't have to go very far out on the limb when they are only certificated in the business of health. And I might add that in their annual statement, when they report the stop-loss insurance to the Department of Insurance, they report it under their health business. So I think you do not have to stretch very far to say this arises from the business of health insurance.
So Mr. Langenberg, just so I understand, is your argument, it doesn't matter this middle insurance from the employer, it doesn't matter if it's self-funded, it doesn't matter if it's health insurance, the stop-loss insurance is always going to be health insurance because you're covering a medical risk, regardless of what the lower level insurance is.
Well, I guess that's true. But as we've already decided, this particular stop loss that we're talking about here is only applies to employer funded health benefit plans. So that's the only kind of stop loss insurance that we're disputing in this case. I do want to circle back though to the other issue, which is this idea of individuals or groups. Now, as I've pointed out, their policy on the macro level, their policy refers to the employer as a group. The TDI regulations in Rule 3.4005 refers to this as group stop-loss policies. And Chapter 1251 even recognizes that a group policy may be issued to an insurer. So you do not have to go very far out on the limb to say that what we're talking about here is a group, that the employer is a group. But I want to also talk to you more on a broad scale as to the context in which the phrase individual or group is used. And if you look at the context of the insurance tax statutes, you will see that individual or group is intended to be all inclusive, the yin and the yang, the alpha and the omega. It's one or the other. It is either an individual or a group. And you can't use a dictionary to somehow create a hole that the tax statute does not provide. Because when you look at the statute as a whole, you will see that every kind of insurance is subject to insurance premium tax. And why do I say that? I say that because, for example, if you look in Chapter 226, the unauthorized insurance premium tax, it applies, and I'm quoting here, it applies to, quote, any premium for insurance on a subject residence located or to be performed in the state. And if you look at Chapter 221, casualty and insurance premium tax, it applies to any kind of insurance written by the insurer on each kind of property or risk located in this state. So in essence, what you do here is you start with visualize the insurance tax statutes as a big bucket, and you put all of the insurance premiums in there, and then you decide to which tax they applies. And there are certain filters in there. And so, for example, on the unauthorized insurance premium tax, it says that will not be subject to an insurer that holds a certificate of authority to write that kind of insurance. So this is where there is the intersection of the regulatory and the tax. Mr. Siegel wants to convince you that those are two separate things, but in fact, they are joined at the hip because of the unauthorized insurance premium tax. The only way that healthcare services is not subject to the unauthorized insurance premium tax is because it is authorized to issue health insurance, and this is health insurance. So the regulatory and the tax functions are tied at the hip. So you get through this first filter. It's not unauthorized insurance. Then you get to casualty insurance. Again, casualty insurance covers any kind of risk But there's a second filter in there that says it does not include premiums received from the business of health and accident insurance. So the only reason why this premiums, these premiums for this group stop loss insurance are not subject to the property and casualty insurance premium tax are because they are from the business of health and accident insurance. So, and then finally we get down to the bottom of the bucket where you've got the health insurance premium tax. There, healthcare services is trying to say that there's a hole in the bottom of the bucket. And that for some reason, the legislature cleverly used this term individuals or groups to somehow exclude these stop loss premiums. Even though there's no specific exemption for these premiums, they say that they use they cleverly use somehow these words to create a hole through which these healthcare insurance premiums can slip through the bottom of the bucket. And I submit to you that when you look to the tax statutes as a whole, the conclusion is, in this context, everything is intended to be taxed. And the legislature did not intend this phrase individuals or groups to create some kind of a gap in coverage. Rather, what the legislature intended was that this would be an all-inclusive term. It would be one or the other, the yin or the yang. Now, I do want to say one other thing to clarify just for you is that caused me some confusion is this notion of direct tax. And it has been used by healthcare services in two different ways. And I just want to make sure you understand the difference. The American National case talked about direct tax. And when it talked about a direct tax, it meant direct tax as opposed to reinsurance. It's either reinsurance or direct tax. That is the way that healthcare services was using this phrase. Now, and in some portions of the appellee's brief, that's the way they use it when they talk about a direct tax. American National case, by the way, said that stop loss insurance is a direct tax, meaning that it is not reinsurance. Now, when the appellees use that term in their brief, what they mean is that. A premium based on risk to someone other than the policyholder, which is not really what the term direct tax is meant to be. And so my point here is that it does not have to be. There's nothing in the statute that says that the risk has to be to the policyholder in order for it to be health insurance. In the examples that I gave earlier on about group health policy, it's the same thing. In this case, you have a policy that defines covered persons. And the covered person under this policy is not the employer. The covered persons are the employees and the employees' dependents, those who are the covered persons are. So, and the risk that they are covered is for medical costs. So, when you look at this term individual and groups, and you look at the concept of the business of insurance, you will see that in context, there's only one conclusion, and that's that it's subject to the tax. I have a minute left, and I want to talk about the maintenance tax. And I want to repeat where I started on this. The purpose of the maintenance tax is to recover the cost of regulating health insurers and including stop loss insurance. And the Blue Cross and Blue Shield has to submit all of its data regarding these plans. It has to submit these plans for approval. And in fact, the American National case, one of the holdings of that case was that American National had to submit its stop loss insurance to the agency for approval. And this is probably more clear in the Court of Appeals decision than it is in the Supreme Court decision. But the only reason why American National had to submit that policy to the Department of Insurance was because it was a group health insurance policy, just as the TDI regulations call it. And so although the language may talk about in the nature of, if you look at the substance of the holding of the American National case, the holding only works if on the conclusion that what was involved in that case was group health insurance. I'm out of time. I will stop talking.
Thank you, Mr. Langenberg. Mr. Siegel, I show you've got 5 minutes to bring us home.
Thank you. Strict construction is so important in this case. we quote the Texas Supreme Court's cases on strict construction of taxing statutes and what that means. And I ask you to be faithful to that. And what it means is you don't stretch words beyond the plain meaning of those words. And if there's ambiguity or uncertainty, and if there's uncertainty in your mind, you have to go with strict construction. Now, if this was a tax exemption and I was arguing for an exemption, I would lose under that logic. But this isn't an exemption case. Strict construction is important. Second point, the regulation of the stop loss policies does not mean that the stop loss carrier is providing health insurance. He says, well, it references medical claims on a policy application. So what? Medical claims. That doesn't mean that it's health insurance just because it says medical claims. There's a disconnect between saying there's medical claims. Sure, medical claims are going to factor in, as I discussed earlier. The policy,
Mr. Siegel, are there any aspects of something that would be covered by the stop loss that does not hinge off of the employer's loss based on medical expenses?
I would say no, but okay. That kind of gets to my next point. In our brief, we go through every authority in the world. Just to remind you of some of these, page 38. Fifth Circuit, a stop loss policy purchased by the employer's plan is not individual or group policy since it does not benefit individuals but the plan itself. We cite page after page of cases disagreeing with Mr. Langenberg's assertion that individuals are covered under these stop loss plans. No court has ever said that. In fact, the comptroller in hearing number 109-354 says CDI, Texas Department of Health and Practice, does not construe American National as holding that a stop loss policy is direct health insurance, but rather takes the contrary position. Stop loss is not health insurance. This is from a comptroller decision that was adjudicated that the comptroller signed. Then the decision goes on and says staff supports the conclusion the stop loss policies purchased by claimant do not qualify as group health policies. The statutory construction, the trade definition of stop loss policies, and the case law, all discussed above, militate in favor of distinguishing stop loss policies from the health insurance policies because the former benefit the employer while the latter benefits the group members. Mr. Langenberg is misreading the policies. Judge Meacham, by the way, studied the policies. We had an affidavit from Ms. Hyken, who was the person in charge of the policy. And she pointed out how the comptroller was misreading, selectively taking portions of the policies out of context. That's in the summary judgment record. The evidence in the summary judgment record shows you that they're misreading the policies. They're not following insurance law. They're not following the TDI's interpretation. And so I don't feel that this case should be a problem. Now, let's talk about maintenance tax. The maintenance tax is actually very simple. The maintenance tax says in the relevant language that you have to be writing health insurance, premiums collected from writing health insurance. There's no evidence in the summary judgment record that Blue Cross is writing health insurance. There's no authority that says providing stop loss policies is writing health insurance. That's not what American National says. In fact, it says plainly something different than that, because it says it's not writing health insurance, but it's writing direct insurance that can be regulated. The other thing that's really important is that American National, indeed the regulations that Mr. Langenberg cites, go back to the fact that the legislature specifically taxed stop loss in with this risk pool. The risk pool was the reason why they regulated stop loss. And that gave them the right to regulate stop loss because there was a specific tax on stop loss under the risk pool. Well, the problem is that tax got repealed and that tax got changed in 2005 before the years at issue, which are 2012. And as I pointed out, that tax was rewritten to even broaden that tax further. These other taxes that Mr. Langenberg says we have to pay, those don't talk about stop loss. They don't reference stop loss. They talk about health insurance. It's not health insurance. Now, if you have a statute that says health insurance, including stop loss, you're basically taking the common meaning of health insurance, adding stop loss and using including there as a word of expansion. Well, that's what they did in the risk pool. this legislature, and they're not dumb. They don't misunderstand this area. When they instituted this risk pool, they included stop loss. They even changed it again and fine-tuned it in 2005. They've never gone in and added stop loss into these other taxes. They're asking you to add stop loss in. They're asking you to take a pen and take these laws and change them, add requirements, all on policy arguments. They're saying, well, it's a good policy to tax stop loss. I could debate that with you, but you're not the legislature. Thank you.
Ms. Siegel, thank you very much, Mr. Langenberg. Both excellent arguments, really interesting case. As if tax law wasn't intricate enough, we decided to add in the arcane universe of healthcare liability insurance. So that makes it fun and maybe dusts off the cobwebs for the court as well. Thank you all very much for a fine argument. The case will be submitted. The parties are dismissed and the court will stand in recess. Thank you all.